It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin ranks poorly in terms of children's oral health. Some argue that dental therapists could be the answer to the lack of access to proper dental care, particularly in rural portions of our state. We're learning more about what these professionals do, how they differ from dentists, and next steps for legislation on this topic. That's where we'll start on this week's edition of the State Capitol Report. Chimaine Mills is Wisconsin Public Radio's health reporter. Chimaine, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Republican Representative Mary Felczkowski put forth a bill that would ultimately create more access to dental care in Wisconsin. What does access to dental care currently look like in our state?
Well, it's pretty hard to find in a lot of parts of the state. According to the federal government, 64 of the state's 72 counties have at least one shortage area. And for people who are looking for a dentist, this can mean you are searching hours, having to drive miles and miles to find a dentist. And maybe then, if you find one, they may not take your particular type of insurance, which in this case is Medicaid, insurance for low-income people.
So this is primarily a rural problem then, or is it also affecting people in poorer urban areas?
It's both, because you have the problem where the dentist may not take your particular type of insurance, and because it affects both rural and urban areas. That's why you're seeing a broad coalition supporting this bill to create dental therapists.
So how does the bill propose to improve our access? What about these dental therapists? How would that work?
Well, we all know what a dentist is, right? The dentist looks at your mouth, determines what's wrong, what needs to be filled or pulled. And we know what a hygienist is. That's the person who cleans your teeth. Well, somewhere in the middle is what's called a dental therapist. So they work under the supervision of a dentist. They would have to have the okay and be overseen by a dentist, but they wouldn't have all the capabilities of a dentist. For instance, they could fill and drill. They could put on a temporary crown, but they wouldn't do the more complex procedures. They could pull teeth, but only if it's not surgical extraction.
So what will this bill do to provide these dental therapist services in Wisconsin?
Well, critics point out that it doesn't say these dental therapists have to practice in the areas that have shortages. So Minnesota's bill does that. It makes clear that we are trying to address this shortage. Therefore, if you get a license to practice as a dental therapist, you have to practice in one of these areas that has a shortage. Wisconsin's bill does not have that provision, but the author, Mary Felczkowski, says, well, there's so many areas of Wisconsin that have shortages, I don't need to put it in there. Almost anywhere these therapists would practice, if the bill goes through, would improve the situation now.
What does it cost to see a dental therapist as opposed to a dentist? I'm going to assume that it's cheaper.
It's about half the cost. And that's why the state has a stake in this, because it is reimbursing the care that is provided to these people on Medicaid.
And so how is the pay different then for dental therapists as opposed to dentists?
Well, that pay is also lower. They make about half what a dentist makes.
We're talking about legislation that would allow dental therapists in Wisconsin. Our guide to this discussion, WPR reporter Chimaine Mills. What questions do you have about it? 800-642-1234. Do you think dental therapists are a good idea? Let's talk about the state of oral health in Wisconsin, Chimaine. What does it look like, and how do we stack up in Wisconsin against other states?
Well, unfortunately, we've been at the bottom of the list for a long time. We're 45th now, according to a comparison of other states. We were 50th at one point, and Minnesota also was down at the bottom. They were 50th. And part of the problem is we're both rural states, so that's a problem for access is transportation. It's not only finding a dentist who will take your particular form of payment, it's also getting to the dentist. So part of the problem is transportation.
Well, is there any effort to incentivize these dental therapists to move to rural areas or areas that are underserved? And how do we know that this is going to improve access?
Well, that's just it. The opponents, which is mainly the Wisconsin Dental Association and the Marquette School of Dentistry, say there are other ways to improve access. I mean, just licensing dental therapists who may or may not practice in areas where there are a shortage is not going to do it alone. What they want is loan repayment for those who promise to practice in areas of shortage. They want other things like higher Medicaid reimbursement rates for existing dentists. And so they say they want a more comprehensive approach to this problem. They don't believe dental therapists alone will solve a problem which results in between 30 and 40,000 people across the state going to emergency rooms for tooth problems.
Representative Felskowski says that there is a nationwide movement to enable dental therapists to work in their states. Is this, in fact, a national movement? Where are we seeing this?
Well, it's a national movement in the sense 12 states have some form of dental therapy law right now. The momentum has been in the last year where you've seen half a dozen states pass laws licensing this particular dental provider. So she's right. There definitely is momentum. It's not widespread yet.
Now, these dental therapists would be in a role similar to what? Physician assistants in medicine?
Yeah, and that's probably what most of us can relate to. If you go to the doctor nowadays, more than likely you're going to see what we refer to as a PA, a physician assistant. You might also see your doctor, but PAs are, you know, in a lot of healthcare right now. And that is the comparison being made to dental therapists. They could do some of the preliminary work, the less complex healthcare work. The Dental Association tries to poke hole in this argument, saying that comparison is unfair because a physician assistant has a lot more training than these dental therapists would have. A dental therapist would have 3 years at a tech school.
Okay, so how does that 3 years at a tech school compare to what it would take to be a dentist?
Well, most dentists, they have the PhD. So, I mean, they have a doctorate. I mean, it takes years and years to become a dentist. However, the therapists are not going to be doing the complex work that dentists are doing. They're mm-hmm. going to be doing the drilling and filling, basic restorative work.
So this bill will get a public hearing this week on Wednesday. What are we expecting at the hearing, and then what happens after that?
Actually, we already had the hearing, and surprisingly, it was packed. I didn't know dentistry was such an exciting issue, but it was filled mainly with dental hygienists who see this as a career path. So, yeah, we've had the one hearing. We are going to have another hearing, according to the author. She says she's been promised by leadership there will be a hearing in the Assembly this fall. So we had the Senate hearing. We may also get a public hearing in the Assembly this fall.
Any thoughts on what the chances are of this bill becoming law?
Well, I've learned not to predict too many things with the legislature
yeah,
over the
I
years. But she has been promised a hearing, and okay. She says she's optimistic, so.
Well, that's a good sign. Chimaine, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, John.
Chimaine Mills is Wisconsin Public Radio's health reporter. Our state capitol report continues in just a moment. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A Republican-controlled committee has voted to approve Governor Tony Evers' pick to lead the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Andrea Palm. We're also going to hear about why 26 delegations attending the Democratic National Convention are staying in Illinois and what the state is doing to crack down on elder abuse. We'll get those details as our State Capitol Report continues with State Capitol Reporter Laurel White. Laurel, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Wednesday, a Republican-controlled committee voted to approve Governor Evers' pick to lead the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, Andrea Palm, who we had on the show recently. Was this a surprising move from the committee?
Well, this is something that, we're obviously expecting kind of a gradual process from state lawmakers taking up these appointments by Governor Evers to lead the various departments in his cabinet. We've had a couple of these so far. I think most notably, some folks might remember hearing about Department of Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson. That one was a little bit more controversial. People have talked about Thompson's history of a transportation lobbyist. So there was a little bit more kind of back and forth and debate about him in particular. So when you ask about whether it was surprising or not, you know, we never totally know what's going to happen in these committee votes, but I don't think there was as much debate about Andrea Palm as DHS secretary as there was about Thompson, though there were some kind of some negative conversations, I think, leading up to the vote.
Well, what did Republicans have to say about Palm and her experience? Mm-hmm. What do they like? What do they not like?
So there was a lot of positive sort of feedback and conversation about Palm during this vote. They talked about just sort of the breadth and depth of her experience working in the healthcare realm throughout her career. A lot of Republicans spoke highly of her. Obviously, they meet with her one-on-one before they hold these votes. But I think what's most notable at this stage of her confirmation process is there was some opposition voice during the hearing, and that came from one Republican senator in particular, Senator Andre Jacques.
Well, what were his reservations about Palm?
So he is primarily concerned about Palm's appointment of one of her deputies, actually. So it's not so much a problem with Palm herself, but rather a choice that Palm made and sort of the folks that she's surrounding herself with. So one of these deputy secretaries used to work for Planned Parenthood. And Jacques says that Palm choosing someone allied within an organization that provides abortions sends the wrong message and sort of advances the wrong set of priorities as a state department. So he said that he just can't support Palm's nomination because that's an individual that she chose to be in her kind of leadership team.
So if Palm is confirmed, what about her job will be different?
Really nothing at all. So these individuals, these department secretaries, were appointed by Governor Evers when he took office in January. They've been doing the job for these several months. Basically, what this process is, you know, they're just kind of getting that stamp of approval from lawmakers that's required for these appointments. So it's just kind of a very long job interview, but she's already doing the job.
Yeah, it's almost 9 months long. Now, at this point, right. What happens to Palm's nomination next? What's the final step for confirmation?
So the final step is to go before the entire state Senate. The state Senate isn't in Madison right now. They're taking a little bit of a break over the summer to go back to their various parts of the state and talk to constituents. So we're expecting them to come back probably in October. So that's when we can look for this vote of the full Senate.
We're getting an update on recent news in state politics from Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Reporter. What questions do you have about the state Senate confirmation hearings or next year's Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee? Let us have your thoughts at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Laurel, we recently learned that 26 of the delegations attending the 2020 Democratic National Convention will be staying at hotels in Illinois. What do we know about that, and what do we know about the reasons behind this decision?
So I think this was something that caught a lot of people off guard, because there's been a lot of conversation about the economic impact of the Democratic National Convention in Wisconsin and sort of what a victory it was for Milwaukee to be hosting the convention. So to hear that 26 delegations that are coming to the DNC are actually staying in Illinois, I think put some folks off kilter. So here's what's happening with this. Of the official delegations, you know, the people that come to represent specific states for the nomination process, they're all assigned different hotels that they're supposed to stay in. Now, 26 of these delegations from states like California, for example, are going to be staying at locations in Illinois that are in Lake County, Illinois, and other kind of northern parts of the state, Rosemont. Some folks might be familiar with Rosemont. There's a big arena there. And they'll be transported up to the convention during the proceedings. What DNC officials are saying about this is that that has been part of the plan all along, that actually the pitch to have the DNC in Milwaukee included this strategy of having folks in hotels in Illinois to sort of make it a regional economic impact. And just because of the volume of the number of people, it's really kind of necessary to have this sort of spreading out of individuals, because these delegates aren't the only people that are going to be using hotels for the DNC, obviously. You have all sorts of other people, including, you know, reporters, obviously, donors, activists, volunteers, also taking up hotel space. So they said really kind of moving into the Illinois market is essential, and it doesn't mean that people aren't going to be staying in hotels in places like Madison, for example, or Racine or Kenosha, which were kind of the places that were held up when they heard about people staying in Illinois and saying, hey, well, what about Racine? What about Madison?
Well, Racine County Executive Jonathan Delgrave said he wants DNC officials to reconsider the Illinois hotel assignments. Is that likely at this point?
I don't think so. You know, this is obviously a very planned out process. This is something they've been working on for an awful long time. And again, you know, as I mentioned, this was part of the process all along. It was kind of part of the pitch in the very beginning. And I think it's why Illinois officials lobbied on behalf of Wisconsin to bring it here instead of another part of the country, because they knew they'd be benefiting from it as well.
Laurel, moving on to another topic, a package of bills aimed at tackling elder abuse was introduced in the legislature last Tuesday. Let's talk about what's in those proposals.
So this is a handful of bills that actually came out of a task force on elder abuse that was convened by the former Attorney General, Brad Schimmel. And what these proposals do, it's kind of a wide variety of things. One is increasing penalties on individuals who commit elder abuse. And elder abuse, for individuals who aren't familiar with that, it could be the financial, emotional, psychological abuse of elderly people in Wisconsin. Other proposals also require courts to expedite trials that are related to elder abuse, just kind of move them more quickly through the legal process and provide some different accommodations for elderly folks as they're going through that process. And then another one that I thought was particularly interesting is one that actually allows financial advisors to delay making a withdrawal from a bank account if they believe their client is being victimized.
How big a problem do we think this is in Wisconsin?
So this is a pretty big problem, according to state officials. This is something that is on the rise in Wisconsin and has been increasing over the past several years. We know that Wisconsin has an aging population, particularly in rural parts of the state. So that's why this task force was actually called under the previous administration, because they sort of saw a trend of, not only are we getting older as a state, but there are some folks that are really being taken advantage of at higher rates, and they wanted to find a way to kind of curb that before it got any worse.
What happens next for this package of bills?
So this package is in the really early stages. So right now it's being circulated for co-sponsorship around the state capitol. So basically these summaries of bills are going around to all the lawmakers and they're deciding whether or not they want to lend their name to it in the process. And then after that, we go through the committee process. So they'll get a public hearing where people can come in and experts can sort of lend their expertise to the issue, answer some questions, members of the public can come in, and all of that has to happen before it even goes before a committee vote. So we've got a lot of steps to go.
Yeah, it's early days, but do you have a sense there's some momentum behind this, that this is something the legislature really wants to get done?
Well, when I spoke with the sponsor last week, he said that he's certainly been in touch with the legislative leaders in each chamber, of course, the Republican-controlled Assembly and Senate. And he said that he believes there's going to be strong support from them as the process moves forward. And he's hoping to get some bipartisan support. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, Laura White, I know that when something comes up about this again, you'll be the one reporting on it. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, John.
Laura White is WPR's State Capitol Reporter. Up next, the news. Then our State Capitol Report continues with a conversation about children's mental health. I'm John Munson. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction recently awarded more than $6 million in grants to support mental health in schools. That's more than double the money provided in the previous state budget. As our state capitol report continues, we'll talk with the newly appointed director of the Office of Children's Mental Health. Are you a student or the parent of a student who struggles with mental health issues? Do you have enough services and training in your school? What do you think about the state's recent push to expand access to services in our schools? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Linda Hall is the newly appointed director of the Office of Children's Mental Health in Wisconsin. She was the previous executive director of the Wisconsin Association of Family and Children's Agencies. Linda, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. I'm happy to be with you and have this opportunity to bring awareness to children's mental health in Wisconsin.
Well, how big an issue is this? Give us an idea of the scope of the problem we're trying to deal with here.
Well, our kids are really struggling. One in five children have a diagnosed mental health condition, and they're experiencing significant levels of anxiety and depression. We also know that teens in Wisconsin are committing suicide at a higher rate than most other states. And as you alluded to in your introduction, there's almost everybody I talk to seems to know a parent who is struggling with a child or teachers who are struggling with the kids that are in their classrooms who are having mental health challenges. So there's a lot of work to be done in this area. For our Office of Children's Mental Health, we really have a vision that every child in Wisconsin grows up feeling healthy, happy, and hopeful for the future, and that should they have a mental health challenge, that they don't feel alone, and they know who to turn to for help. Because we know that if kids can get help with they get the care they need early on, they have a much better chance to being on the road to being a healthy adult, which is good for all of us in Wisconsin.
Why is this happening? Do we have any idea? Is it that we're just more aware of the issue, or are we really seeing an increase in mental health problems among our youth?
I think there it's a combination of both. Some of the things that we do know are that access to mental health care is more limited than we'd like to see. Wisconsin, like many other states, has a shortage of mental health providers, and we know that our educators need more support in terms of helping kids with the kind of toxic stress they come to school with. We also know that parents and families are experiencing a lot of toxic stress these days. They have experienced previous traumas, and a lot of them are facing financial hardship, housing instability. So all those things create issues for kids who are trying to cope with what's going on in their families' lives. We also have seen recently that there is a decrease in what we call flourishing behaviors. So those are really a children's ability to demonstrate affection, to be resilient, and to be curious about learning new things. So that in combination with what I think people are more aware of, when we talk about awareness, people are more aware of the reduced time that children are in face-to-face interaction with kids around them and others because their screen time on computers and games has increased. So there are a number of factors that we're taking a look at and trying to find out where can we influence this to change this trajectory.
Okay, so what are your priorities right now to help children who need access to these services in Wisconsin?
Well, we're, you know, as I step into this role as the director of the Office of Children's Mental Health, we're taking a look at everything that the office has done so far, and we're going to try to focus on some priority areas. We're going to frame this in terms of looking at the lifespan of a child. So if we think about the children, young children, we know that access to quality child care is just critical. And we know that the child care workers could use more support in terms of how they work with kids. So we're going to take a look at that area. We're also going to look, moving up the age scale a little bit, we get to kids in elementary school and on into high school. We want to look at their social, emotional well-being and the protective factors for them to be able to have good interactions with those around them and encouraging them to prioritize their really face-to-face interactions with other people. We're also going to look at mental health challenges. And as I mentioned earlier, suicide is an issue we need to examine. We're going to look at the possibilities of increasing the options that teens have to connect with others, whether that's through a hotline or through peer-led programs in schools, which is what a lot of teens are telling us that they want. And then we're going to look also at families and, you know, really look at this as building a good foundation for children and supporting families with the kinds of education and the tools they need to help nurture their children.
The Office of Children's Mental Health was created in the 2013 biennium to has continued since then. What's the office done since forming to help with mental health in children in Wisconsin?
Well, the office has been very active in engaging a wide group of stakeholders in identifying problems and helping us look at solutions. So we have more than 100 partners in the work that we do, and we bring these stakeholders together. They are folks from other state agencies, they are providers, they are parents, there are people with lived experience. We bring these folks together to talk about what the key issues are and how we might influence what's happening for children. And one of the ways I can tell you about how we have been focusing our efforts so far is to fill you in on the kinds of committees that we have working. We have a committee on resiliency. We have access to mental health care. We're also working on trauma-informed care and on infant and toddler mental health. So different areas where we have been focusing and identifying efforts to be made. We are also a leader in terms of engaging people with lived experience. So that means people who have mental health challenges or are advocating for children or others in their family who have mental health challenges. And we bring those folks together to help inform our policy discussions And we encourage others to do the same. We're encouraging state government to do that. We're also encouraging agencies and other providers, other organizations, to think about how they can incorporate people who know what it's like to live with a mental health challenge and can help identify the barriers in the way to doing that successfully.
We're talking about children's mental health for the rest of this hour with your questions and thoughts inserted along the way as well, if you care to share them with us. Our guest is Linda Hall, the new director of Wisconsin's Youth Mental Health Office. Are there gaps in mental health services for kids in your community? What do you think could be done to help children feel better? How could our lawmakers or schools be addressing the issue of youth mental health? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Linda, you previously worked as the executive director of the Wisconsin Association of Family and Children's Agencies. How are you using your previous experience in your new position?
Well, at the Wisconsin Association of Family and Children's Agencies, I had the privilege of leading a statewide association of mental health providers. So they were working with a broad range of children and families, looking at ways to support them in living healthy lives in the community, and really engaging with them around support and community-based mental health. And this is a unique group of organizations that was really interested in best practice. So I really was able to focus a lot on best practice in terms of mental health and innovation in programming. So I've had lots of years of experience of that. Also, previous to that, I was involved in health policy in a number of ways, but especially related to children and children in low-income brackets. So lots of experience with Medicaid policy. And we know that in terms of school mental health, where teachers are identifying kids who have challenges that they need help with, the majority of those kids are low-income kids.
Well, that and low-income, and probably because of just the geography of the state, this is also a big problem in rural Wisconsin, where resources, mental health resources, period, are scarce, isn't it?
It definitely is a problem in the rural areas, but we can't discount the urban areas. There really are challenges all over the state. That said, we are going to take a strong look at what we can do to provide some more resources in the rural areas. You know, John, one of the things I did while I was at the Wisconsin Association of Family and Children's Agencies was to be involved with the statewide coalition to expand school-based mental health. And we know that bringing therapists into the schools has been very helpful for a lot of kids. And so that's one of the strategies that we can look at for the northern part of the state, is how can we grow those school mental health programs.
Mm-hmm. Linda Hall is the newly appointed director of the Office of Children's Mental Health. Our conversation about mental health issues in our schools and in our youth continues in a moment. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In our State Capitol Report today, we're talking about mental health issues among our youth in Wisconsin. What gaps in children's mental health services do you see in your community? Shortage of providers, problems with transportation, lack of affordable options. What problems do you think we need to be working harder to address, and how do you think we should be addressing them? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email is ideas@wpr.org. My guest, Linda Hall, the newly appointed director of the Office of Children's Mental Health. Our conversation about mental health issues in our schools is what we're talking about right now with Scott in Madison, who's joining us by phone. Scott, good morning. Thanks for joining us today.
Good Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, this topic up. I've been teaching for 16 years, and the mental health needs are becoming greater and greater, and we're not getting an increase in resources almost at all. In fact, we're getting like less resources with teachers based on money and allocations in our schools. We have so many kids with high needs that we've identified that we want to support, and we don't have any tools financially given to us in the schools to help them. We're just told to keep them in the classroom and do your best. And that's just not a system that's going to help our kids do successfully academically or emotionally when they have such high needs. So I'm very happy to hear this. We have seen a little bit of an increase just recently in some of the schools with mental health workers that are part-time, and they've been flooded. And so they're part-time. They can get like maybe 10 kids, and they've been identified that they need to have like 60 on their caseload, but they just don't have enough people in there to do the job yet. So I'm just so glad this is coming to the forefront, and I'm hoping soon we'll actually see that support in the school.
Scott, thank you so much for that call. Linda Hall, is what Scott's saying, is that typical of what you're hearing?
Definitely. Thank you, Scott, for bringing that perspective to this work. I mean, that's really the kind of words that I heard from so many teachers as I got involved in the School Mental Health Coalition. And Scott is right. We are bringing some more resources to the issue. Governor Evers has been a strong supporter of increasing school mental health. He advanced in his budget dollars to increase the funding for school mental health programs. So as you mentioned earlier on, there was $6 million more in this budget. We had hoped to have more, but we know that those dollars are really going to schools, and schools are eager to get those dollars. They are trying to, every year so far, we've had more schools apply for the money than there was money there. So there definitely resources need to be increased, but we're seeing such a growth in terms of teachers and school professionals saying we need to provide some more support to our educators. And so they're doing that in a variety of ways, through training, additional training for teachers, for mental health navigators, so that the kids who the school therapist can't reach, or is they have issues that are beyond what the school therapist even can do, those kids can be connected to somebody else for ongoing care. And we also have a lot of effort going on around identification projects. So youth mental health first aid, which is a way for kids to learn about mental health issues and be able to support their peers and identify issues that their kids are their friends are having and help them get support.
Scott, thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to Jennifer, who's joining us from Madison. Jennifer, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. My comment was regarding the resources. I think I was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult, so I was really aware of the differences before and after I started treatment for that. And since then, it's been 10 years, and I found even within the medical community, it's really hard to find a knowledgeable provider on, you know, the effects of the ADHD and the differences between, you know, medicated, not medicated. And so I think part of the resourcing problem is there's so little understanding in the medical field to, you know, kind of train the therapists and
okay.
Counselors.
All right, Jennifer, thanks so much for your call. Is one of the issues, Linda, that our providers aren't properly trained or don't have enough training?
Well, I think that Jennifer raises an important issue. As we said before, we have a shortage of providers, and we also have so much new understanding now about the early brain development and how the brain works, that there are many things that existing therapists are still being trained on. One thing that we are actively supporting is trauma-informed care, which is an approach to looking at what a person's issues are and saying, not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you. And that can be important in terms of looking at how we move forward in terms of mental health. But when we look also at the provider shortage, I think we have to be very creative about how we're going to address the multiple mental health challenges that folks have when we don't have enough people in the workforce. And so I think what we have going for us in Wisconsin is that we are on the forefront in terms of some of these new approaches to mental health care, and we're going to be working with providers to help them be the best they can be in the situations that we have right now.
Let's take another call. Helen is with us in Little Chute. Helen, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Oh, good morning. I'm just calling to say thank you for having this program. It's a very, very important program on the air, and I actually hope it'll be a series because the problem is very acute and important. I have a granddaughter who's 16. She's an honor student. She's been clinically diagnosed depressed. And there are not enough counselors and therapists in Wisconsin to help us. The teachers do the best they can. I have to applaud them. But we definitely need more funding in this area. And I'm just thrilled that this topic is being presented. But we need more time to cover this serious issue for our youth. And I think that social media contributes to this problem. But that's only one small area. But again, thank you very much as a very concerned grandmother.
Helen, thank you so much for your call this morning. Linda, you mentioned screen time. Social media is certainly a feature of the mental health landscape here in 2019, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, and I think your listeners know that more studies are showing that screen time can contribute to depression. We also know that screen time can be important, can be used in healthy ways to connect kids. So we're going to try to be looking at both sides of that coin and figure out, you know, how can we encourage healthy screen time while we're also encouraging really important face-to-face interactions. But let me just say that, you know, what Helen expresses in terms of having a grandchild who's having challenges, and these are the kinds of stories that I hear every day, and we know that we need more support for folks. This is a bipartisan issue in Wisconsin, and so we're hopeful that we'll continue to get support from the legislature around these issues also, and that we can increase support. One of the ways that support was increased for mental health in schools in particular is that the coalition I mentioned before was active in promoting payment for the time that the therapist needs to talk to the teacher about what's happening with the kids in their classroom. So if a therapist is seeing a child in a teacher's classroom, that after speaking with the child and understanding them, creating a treatment plan for them, then that therapist can go to the teacher and say, this is what is going on with this kid, and this is how you can support our treatment plan, which means that treatment for the child is going to go faster. They get a chance to practice their treatment, their practice, their plan in the classroom. And that teacher learns something about how to work with that child and hopefully can use that learning to help other kids who have similar issues. So those kinds of things are really, you know, hopeful that we've got more, we're going in the right direction, but we have more to do.
We have work to do. Okay, that's a great thought to end on. Thank you so much, Linda. Appreciate you being here with us this morning. Linda Hall is the new director of Wisconsin's Youth Mental Health Office. Just ahead, a wrongful conviction recently led the city of Milwaukee to pay a man $7.5 million. We learn about the case and how the state responds to errors in criminal justice. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.